Burst the bubble!
Hello and welcome to Burst the Bubble live on KFN, the first of 2011. Whole new year.
Yep. Another one. They keep coming.
We can't seem to stop them. But yes, I'm Michael Quinterio.
And I'm Chris Merton.
And we're going to be taking you through the next hour with some of the news stories that we found, well, since our last show, actually. Not just in the past week. We've had a bit more selection. Although, of course, with Christmas happening, that kind of puts a stop to a lot of news.
Mm-mm. Also, you've clearly been trying harder than me. Michael's stories are carefully selected from the past 3 weeks. Mine are hastily selected from the past hour.
Let's see if you can guess which are which. That's a fun game. Fun new game for you to play along at home. But yes, if you want to comment on any of our stories or play that game, you can email us studio@camfm.co.uk, or you can go to our website www.camfm.co.uk and click on there and use the web form. But let's get started with our bursting of the bubble. Firstly, an optician who has been jailed for NHS fraud, which makes it sound like it's some specific type of fraud rather than just generic fraud. I'm not sure whether NHS fraud is different.
Yeah, it's a subtype of fraud.
Publicly funded fraud.
But, I mean, what the guy's done here is fairly mundane. He's basically just sort of said, "Dear NHS, please give me 23 grand. Yours sincerely, a fraudster." And the NHS said, "Yeah, you go, 23 grand, awesome." Which is all fair and good, except I like the fact that the way he got away with this is he failed to disclose that he had previously been convicted of dishonesty.
I didn't realise that was a crime. just think of all the public figures we could lock up for that.
Yes. Yeah, I didn't realise dishonesty was a crime, and also I'm proud of the NHS for embedding paradox within their application process. Because what they've asked this man is, "Are you dishonest?" And he presumably at that point sort of fell into a horrible sort of fug of uncertainty. And half an hour later woke up with a searing headache and decided he would just say he was a straight and good man and leave it at that.
The bit that I like is that apparently the crime, which is basically him just basically asking for extra stuff and getting it without when he shouldn't have, was that it was came to light after routine checks of the practice's patients. So I'm just wondering whether in these opticians, it's kind of like you get a little leaflet after you finished, and it's going, how do you rate our friendliness? How do you rate our
roughly what do you think he spent on you? just as a ballpark figure.
Yeah, do you feel that your optician is being entirely honest with you? did he select the right pair of glasses for you, or did he just go, "Perhaps you'd like these? I can get them for you for exactly the same price, these gold encrusted glasses here."
Yeah, little known fact, mate, but two milk bottle bottoms actually work more or less as well as your garden variety glasses. Here, try it. Don't operate heavy machinery, drive, or try to look in front of you. And yeah, give it a go. I'll keep the cash for now, just safe, and that'll be good. I wouldn't be very good at fraud. I don't have a conviction for dishonesty.
Well, you'd say that even if you
were just on the verge of believing me there, weren't you? I just nearly had you. Nearly.
So close.
Still not a good fraudster. That's my New Year's resolution.
What? to not become a good fraudster, or become a good fraudster?
To become a better fraudster, but then also to become better at covering up after having become a better fraudster. Obviously, this is not a good start on that second New Year's resolution. I'm playing for the double bluff at this point.
Just going on radio going, I'm not fraudster. I did not have sexual relations with that woman.
Well, that's definitely true.
I wasn't talking about you there. I was just going for famous past, being dishonest to the nation. The world, and you just gone and applied that to yourself.
Oh, I deny having done anything to Monica Lewinsky. I mean, I think that's fair enough. I'm practicing my plausible deniability here, starting with things that are really, really plausible.
Can you work your way up? Go on. Work your way up the implausibility scale.
Margaret Thatcher, her neither. I mean, really. We're going to be here for a while if I deny everybody.
Oh, we're not just denying that you've had relations with anyone. We're just denying people now. It's kind of like, I'm going to deny, oh, I don't know, someone who reads the news on telly. I'm just going to deny that they exist.
What, Hugh Edwards?
Yeah, that one. That'll do.
No, I have, actually. It's practically the only one, though. You couldn't have picked a worse example.
I'm wondering what other types of fraud there are. There's NHS fraud. What other type? Is this a CIA fraud? I'm just going for the three-letter acronyms here.
Would that be evading the CIA, like successfully keeping state secrets?
No. There we go. That was something exciting that happened in Shropshire. Between 2007 and 2000.
It was the only exciting thing that happened in Shropshire, let's be honest. Shropshire doesn't get much. Better than NHS fraud.
If we're going for dishonesty, we've also got we've got a theft here. Two men robbed a specialist coin shop in Biggleswade. The best thing about this is the description of the guy who did it. Because it makes you wonder whether we've gone back into some sort of Sherlock Holmes novel or something. It's kind of like, he wore a brown trilby style hat, brown suit jacket, black trousers and leather gloves. The second man was in his 30s and wore a blue hooded jacket. Okay, the hood doesn't fit in there, so in the Sherlock Holmes so well, but the first one sounds quite dapper.
Yeah, clearly the police didn't want to say we're looking for a 19th century gentleman thief, but that is what they're looking for. They dug out the old conical helmets for that one. Conical helmets? No, domula helmets. You know, those ones the police wore. The ones that look cool.
Well, the ones that were always getting nicked in Jeeves and Wooster novels. Those ones. The robber asked to see a valuable sovereign.
King George VI walked out of the closet and said, I live! And he said, no.
I mean the coin.
Yeah. So King George VI went, sorry! And backed back into the afterlife. And he was given a coin.
The owner was then pushed to the ground before a second man entered.
That was George VI again.
And back again.
Sorry, not me again.
Oh, no. It's just like, that sounds like the worst way of organising a crime, though. It's kind of like, do you know what we'll do? To make it look less like a crime, we'll have our first robber enter the store, and then here's the cunning bit. We'll wait a bit before the second one comes in.
It should be pointed out the first one did punch the man in the face. That's very much, you know, that's laying your cards on the table there. Yeah. Once you've slugged the shopkeeper in the face, you've very much committed to the theft path. There's very little chance you'll be able to say, oh, sorry, I slipped. I was supposed to be looking at my watch there, and I raised my hand slightly too vigorously and accidentally smashed you in the face. So, sorry about that. You too, Your Majesty, and I'll just be on my way. But what I wonder about this story, you know, is that how do you fence? Like, you've stolen loads of classic coins that exist in basically one shop in Biggleswade. Where are you going to sell them except for that same shop in Biggleswade? Are you going to have to come back wearing a fake moustache on the day when the other coin collector is on duty and try to fence his own coins back to him?
I like the idea that actually what's going to happen is that they're going to realise that they can't do much with it and just have to palm it off in when they're trying to buy things in shops. It's like
just passing off a sovereign as a 10p.
Yes.
Turns out vending machines will take them.
Oh, they could put will any of them actually have any actual gold in? Because they could put them in that. We had in the past Burst of Bubble, we had gold vending machines. Perhaps we have the opposite. We have kind of like machines where you put your gold in an envelope and put it in. Perhaps that would be a way of.
Yeah, okay. So you're going to need to go using vending machines, buying things that cost odd multiples of 10p and try and get 10 penny change. And you might find that you've got a florin or something will emerge. And huzzah! I don't know how much a florin sells for. But you'll be very mildly rich.
Either that, or these people are actually time travellers. Because that would be a best crime ever.
Like, they're casing the joint in the modern day to go back to when they were legal currency. Yeah, okay.
And then you go back, and no one's going to be suspicious about where you got them from, because you haven't nicked them yet.
Of course. And then you put them in a bank account, and then interest accrues until the modern day, when you withdraw the same amount of money, use it to buy a cricket bat, use that to smash in the window of another classic coin shop, and so the cycle perpetuates.
And then eventually you come back to modern time and live the life of Riley, just relaxing there with your ill-gotten gains. Of course, they never thought about actually just selling the time machine.
Well, yeah, at some point you'll get around to thinking, maybe we should go and, like, stop the Berlin Wall or something. But, you know, first and foremost, classic coins.
If you've got any comments, how would you fence some classic coins? Or any comments about our other story? Any comments about dodgy goings on in opticians? You can email us, studio@camfm.co.uk, or you can go onto our website, www.camfm.co.uk, and click on the web form. And we'll be back with some more news stories after this.
Your city, your station, your Cam FM.
That was Tonight by the Smashing Pumpkins. You're listening to Burst of Bubble live on Cam FM.
That's right. And next up, we're going to be talking about a story from Glasgow, a story from the Glasgow pantomime, specifically. So far, so mundane. But it's about the Glasgow pantomime, which broke the Geneva Convention.
Yeah, you might wonder how the pantomime broke the Geneva Convention. It was the... there's a character in it, it's called Nurse Poultice. And her costume had the Red Cross on it, mm-hmm. which, as all those international law students know, can only be used by the International Red Cross.
The actual Red Cross, yes.
Because otherwise, yeah, because...
There's a serious danger that, insurgent combatants on the edges of Glasgow might run through the theatre and go, oh, thank God, medical aid. That's what we needed after having been shot up by the oppressive government.
I think what's more likely is that they just want to be careful about people using it so that we can always go Red Cross. That's it. That's the Red Cross, rather than Red Cross. We're not sure. It might be a pantomime day. We might have to.
If it
them.
Looks like a stupid campy costume, that's probably not a medic. That's a fairly good rule, I suppose. The one day when somebody is busy doing the pantomime, and then World War III breaks out, and they run out onto the streets and start doing their thing, that's going to be a problem. That's the point when you need to rip off your fake Red Cross from your nurse's uniform and stick on the real one. So for the one person who is in the intersection of that Venn diagram of both medically qualified and playing a nurse in panto, then that one person is going to be very glad of the International Committee of the Red Cross's decision.
But now they've replaced it with a green cross, which doesn't violate the Geneva Convention at all, despite it clashing horribly with the rest of the costume.
And what a red-green colourblind people, eh?
Oh, yeah, they forget.
Yeah, see, yes, they won't be able to tell the difference between pantomime and not pantomime. Well, that's all too often the problem in today's world.
I mean, you're just walking down the street, you see two people run out of a bank with bags labelled swag, running straight through a pane of glass that's being carried across the road.
And you think, am I in pantomime? I think I'm dreaming. Oh, no, shards of glass. Ah.
I'm impressed how you managed to get the shards of glass over you then.
I was walking past the pane of glass going, num-dee-dum-dee-dum, this is going to be fine, I'll wake up any minute now.
I just like the fact there's a spokesman for the Red Cross here, and it's kind of all very serious. Misuse of the emblem, even in an innocent and light-hearted manner, could dilute its neutrality and its ability to protect. But then it's going, when we contacted the theatre management, they quickly changed the cross on the nurse's costume to green, and we applaud them for that.
That is good.
It's like well done, Glasgow pantomime.
To impact its neutrality, Nurse Poultice here is going to need to sort of sit there in panto saying things to the kids like, now, kiddies, remember what we all hate, Palestinian separatism. You know, that's the kind of situation that the ICRC is obviously concerned about here.
Yeah.
Very rarely panto gets the kids to boo Palestine. So I was wondering, right, So now we've cleared up the Panto's compliance with that particular passage of the Geneva Convention. How are they on the rest of it?
Well,
so, for example, keeping prisoners of war?
No, not doing that.
No?
I'm a little unsure where you're going with this.
I mean, you know, they could, for example, race across the street and kidnap Dick Whittington. He was obviously doing Panto in another theatre, and then go and, like, you know, tie him up in the wings. I mean, that's a pretty good set piece to do at the end of your Panto, to bring out Dick Whittington.
It is Robin Hood, The Adventures of Robin Hood, this Panto, so I don't know, it does Robin Hood.
Would he kidnap Dick Whittington if he was pressed?
Robin Hood, does he raid the Geneva Convention?
Oh, I see, yes. Yes, he probably, the Sheriff of Nottingham probably gets a little bit more stick than the Swiss would be happy with.
there we go. That's our contribution to the international community and Geneva Convention then. but moving on, we've got another story. This is another Christmassy story from a little while ago. Some people went to a Californian mall to start singing, and they started singing some nice festive carols, and I'm not quite sure they were expecting 5,000 people turning up to sing, and I'm not sure the building was designed to take that, because the building started shaking and they all had to be evacuated. It's like, you know that little trick with the wine glass? It's like that, but on a much bigger scale.
It's pretty awesome. It's some impressive flash mobbery, for certain. And it's also, I think, an interesting way to bring down society, is that they flash mobbed a shopping mall and closed it down by singing Christmas carols. Now, what if you did that to, say, the gents at Parliament? Now what's going to happen, eh? The gents at Parliament is stuffed with 5,000 people singing "O Come All Ye Faithful." I think the government's going to shut down really quite fast.
Sorry, the gents at Parliament just to me sounds like some sort of trendy wine bar.
Sorry, the barbershop quartet. No, the actual gents' lavatories at Parliament.
I'd be impressed if you could fit 5,000 people in there.
The MPs demand nothing but the best. It's like one of those cavernous ones. It's like a great hall, only with a single chamber pot at the end of it.
I like the reaction of officials and emergency services there at this shopping mall. We want you guys to have a good Christmas, but we have a serious safety issue right now. That's the only way I can imagine him saying it.
Well, he probably didn't say it quite like you, because he did come from Sacramento.
but ignoring the accent, because I can't do the accent.
You don't know.
You're not going to do it the way around. Like, we want you guys to have a good Christmas, but we've got a serious safety issue right now.
Ooh, wow, yes.
How would you say it?
How would I say it? Well, blimey, you put me on the spot there. In song. We want you guys to have a good Christmas, but we have a serious safety issue.
That's just contributing to the problem,
isn't
it?
That would be contributing, yeah. If I made it not harmonise well, that might drive them to move. I'll sing all like horrible discordant minor sixths near where they're singing, and they'll all be like, ah, bad harmony,
and then I'll stop,
or they'll move at least. I'll repel them with the power of song,
and Christmas will be saved.
Yeah, I'll be like a terrible Christmas superhero. I can solve crimes that are tonal,
slightly discordant, man.
yeah. Oh. Just a little bit, man. That's the title I go by most of the time.
A little bit, man. Okay. and moving on again, we've got a heartwarming story to go with the slightly down, slightly off-putting Christmas story that we've just had, which was a group of Devon primary school children have done a project looking at bumblebees, and it's been published in the Royal Society Scientific Journal.
Yes, this was really quite cool. Basically, what's happened here is a ophthalmologist from UCL had a kid at primary school and decided, these guys are more than up to the task and a lot cheaper than lab assistants. So what we're going to do is take some trivial experiment about Bumblebee Vision and get the kids to do it for us. And the kids wrote, you know, they wrote this up as a proper academic paper, and it was published in Biology Letters, which is a journal. So I thought it was just immensely cool in a way. I mean, so obviously it's child labour, strictly speaking. And let me be quite clear: child labour is not cool. But I thought it was very cool that the kids got to do some actual proper science, which really did discover discover something we didn't know, which is about if there's more than one way to characterise a given pattern, which one do the bees appear to use? Their answer was actually that they're capable of using a variety of different modes of categorisation, like surround and colour, and that different bees within their sample population were able to use different metrics, which is kind of cool. The sample size was 5, which is a bit rubbish, but this was primary school children, so there is only so much apiary you can ask them to do. I think apiary? I'm thinking of the word for beekeeping.
I don't know, actually.
I just use beekeeping. Something. Yeah, beekeeping.
I like the fact that that some of the children's results tables were actually published in the journal.
And were written in crayon.
But there's one... there was one on the news story, and it's actually got better handwriting than mine, which is slightly worrying. It's kind of, not only are they publishing more scientific papers than I seem to be doing at the moment, but they're actually got good handwriting as well. I'm feeling really put down.
It's pretty impressive.
they detailed their principal findings there. About bees using combination of colour and spatial relationships deciding where to forage. But also, we also discovered that science is cool and fun because you get to do stuff that no one has ever done before.
every scientific paper should have that somewhere in the conclusion.
to which I want to wonder how they tested this. Did they have some of the people...
Control group sat there in an empty room but sort of going, well, this is no fun. I wish we were discovering new truths.
Yeah, it's like, how do you know no one's done it before? Have you checked everyone? Well, yeah, to be fair, probably yes.
So to a degree here, right, so this is clearly a bit of a stunt here, isn't it? Our UCL guy he has a private research lab, a man named Bo Lotto, oddly enough, presumably not related to Lotto, but anyway.
It's just like, good lottery.
He has like a one-armed bandit built into his chest. another superhero concept there. Anyway, the point being, so this is clearly a little bit of a stunt for him. It's connected with his private research lab. So, where's he going to go from here? He needs something more audacious than getting 8 to 10-year-old children to be your lab assistants.
Exactly the same thing, but on a reality TV show.
It would do it.
And they evict the kids that don't do as much science as the others.
You'd be amazed at the viewing figures that are in child misery. A super nanny, I suppose. Very much traded on that. Okay, so how about you switch it up? Try and have bees do experiments on children. So you have like a proper group of actual scientists trying to train the bees in such a way as to cause the children to believe a certain thing, like, I don't know, that black is white, or in Santa Claus, or something like that. So the challenge is implant ideas in the minds of naive children.
It's horrible. It's worse than my idea. That's even more horrible than my idea.
That is a measurably evil idea, I have to admit.
Yeah. Is that your other New Year's revolution? Revolution? Resolution. A New Year's revolution is like, burn everything.
Don't tell anyone about the New Year's revolution. I haven't got it ready. I'm turning it into an Easter revolution. Easter rise. No.
There's no New Year's revolution. It kind of got pushed back because there were leaves on the line. Snow on the line.
Yes, leaves on the line. Honestly, get your seasonal railway metaphors correctly aligned.
Well, yeah, the New Year's revolution was obviously delayed.
Well, my other one, New Year's resolution, was indeed to become measurably evil. and develop proper means of measurement, obviously. I want double-blind evil test.
But the one last bit on this story before we leave it is that they were looking at to how the bees saw the plants and saw the colour. And the two other scientists who did a commentary on this said that the pupils had had light supervision from Dr. Lotto in the treatment.
Ah, yes.
So even the other scientists were getting in on the general frivolity of the piece. So yes, if you've done any exciting experiments, if you wish you'd have been able to do experiments on bees while you were at school, or in fact you have any comments on any of the other stories, the flash mob or anything like that, you can get in touch with us, studio@camfm.co.uk, or filling out the web form, www.camfm.co.uk. We'll be back with more just after this.
97.2 camfm.co.uk.
On air and online, you're Cam FM.
And yes, this is Burst the Bubble live on Cam FM. Welcome back. That was Girls and Boys by Blur.
Yes, it was. And we are going to be talking about some more frivolous news stories. First and foremost, Romanian witches bringing down the government.
via magic.
I swear this is actually true. Or, no, I don't. No, sorry. I swear this was actually reported, is what I really mean to say. As in, I'm not making it up. The Guardian's making it up. So you can pin the blame on them.
I've actually seen in a couple of different places. They're annoyed that they're being forced to pay taxes. Apparently, they've not... They've been self-employed because there's no kind of like natural pay-as-you-earn system for witch tax. but now witches, astrologers and fortune tellers have to register their professions, and therefore they have to pay 16% tax, just like other self-employed Romanians.
Mm-hmm.
Which to me sounds fair, frankly.
It does, yes. I mean, it kind of legitimises them a bit. It does mean that if you're sort of sat there stirring a cauldron, muttering about Eye of Newt, you do get considered a proper profession, which is a bit rubbish. But yeah, on the other hand, they managed to get into pay for schools and stuff. So yeah, that's pretty good. what I quite liked about this story was they said that in order to prevent the government from taxing them, they were invoking a dead dog and cat excrement. So
that's what they're using—a concoction of. That's not very nice at all.
The Romanian witches are hypothesising that the opposite of tax is cat excrement. It is sort of that the perfect anarchistic society would have lots of, or maybe none of, cat excrement.
Well, if you take the word tax and put it the other way around, it's like zat, which is like a combination of cat and ex. So cat excrement.
It's the noise cats make whilst... No, never mind.
it's one of those things where you're kind of like, well, why are you complaining? You're effectively saying, how dare we give us with these skills be treated exactly the same as everyone else in terms of helping the country? Are the witches claiming that they don't actually use any of the things that taxes go for? Do they not use any?
Yes, they're able to cast the education spell. Health, I suppose. They shouldn't be using that. They should have spells for that. But for education, yeah, I mean, as far as I'm aware, no witch at any point sort of went, avast, knowledge of geography. They probably never said avast.
That's pirates. I'd be a pirate witch.
I'd be a pirate on weekends. Don't tell anyone.
They put a spell on them. They've got a curse that turns them into a pirate.
As curses go, I could deal. It would be a bit rubbish if you worked for WikiLeaks or something. Actually, no, that'd be okay. The adversaries of WikiLeaks. The CIA. Yes, that'd be rubbish. Arr. Why are you talking like that, Operative Jenkins? Can he be helping it? It be Wednesday and Saturn be high in the sky.
But your thing is that they're chucking a poisonous mandrake plant into the river so that evil will befall these politicians. That sounds like poisoning people.
That very much is poisoning people, Michael. poisoning fish, I suppose. I'd like to see a trial related to that. I'd like to get... So, these are Romanian witches. So I'd like to get two of every Romanian profession in a sort of a Noah's Ark kind of way. But then I'll divert from the Ark thing here. What I'm going to do is give each group a dead dog, a bucket of cat poo, and some mandrake, whatever that is, and tell them to do their worst about the government. and I want to see which profession does the best. Because if the witches are truly up to their skills here, the witches should be causing the most governmental strife.
How do you tell who's caused the strife? I mean, it seems to just happen to governments. It seems to be at a peril of being in power. Every government, something bad at some point will happen and you'll get blamed for it.
Okay, so my objective measure is going to be incidences of the words "curse that X," where X is a profession, occurring in the newspaper in the following 2 weeks. For example, "curse that baker, he baked me a cat poo pie." That would be a perfect example of the bakers successfully, you know, causing a little bit of governmental strife there. I think, for example, people who make catapults are probably going to have one of the best times here. I'm not aware that that's really a profession. There's a very low demand for medieval siege equipment. But if you are a maker of that, then that dead dog and that bucket of cat poo is probably going to cause the maximum amount of strife.
There you go. It remains to be seen whether or not where the witches end up paying tax. It's something I'll keep an eye on. I'd be interested to find out.
You think you're taking it up?
No, it's not really my scene.
Wizardry?
Maybe a little more.
Well, racist. Sexist, I suppose.
But rather than speculating on my career progression, we've had a couple of emails in. One all the way from America, actually, apparently. Brian has said that he's sort of combined our two ideas, saying he would watch a reality TV show about bees doing experiments on children.
which is pretty awesome. So if I make the show, I'll put it on Fox. And as is my understanding, I will be burned at the stake. So I'm looking forward to that.
Another email from Jasmine. I like the idea of turning kids into scientists at an early age. If we get enough of them, then scientists can take over the world. What do you think? I'm a scientist, so I'm generally happy with that.
And I'm in favour of world domination.
Also, do you think that paper was peer-reviewed by scientists or primary school kids? Because you get quite different responses. And I like that. To be fair, yeah. This is the thing that gets me, like, when people say you've got to be tried by a jury of your peers. surely, if you're guilty, then a jury is your peers of a criminals who've done the same sort of thing as you. In which case, they're like, go on, let him off.
I mean, you know, as bank robberies go, it wasn't very good. So,
it's turning into the X Factor now. Can we just sort of the police come in with some old criminals? Go, can we just stop you there? You are frankly appalling. You're a disgrace to the name of bank robber.
I mean, you know, you've got the cashier there, and you're holding him up, and that's all good. But it's 5 minutes in. You know, I don't see the bags of swag out. You're just not on time. It's a shambles of a robbery.
Heath Ledger's Joker did it much better. there you go. That's something I'm glad that we don't have. I'm happy with the system.
Heath Ledger's Joker.
Well, no. I'm glad that the character does not exist in real life, to be frank. But I'm also glad that we don't have people going and critiquing robberies during the middle of them. and in fact, trial by jury appears is slightly looser than I have been suggesting.
Although the kids did indeed get reviewed by some primary school kids. The reviews came back, obviously scribbled in crayon, which said there's too many long words and there should be more pictures.
Speaking about crime, here's one that it would be hard to find any peers to sit on a jury. It's a theft of a family of ducks.
Ah, I see what you're getting at there. They would perch on the jury.
Well, no, I was thinking more that you wouldn't be have any peer, anyone else who'd nick ducks.
Fellow duck. Sorry, I thought you meant fellow ducks. Like, you'd have a jury of ducks. I said that would be a bit rubbish because the story is that a man has stolen a duck. So this would be, you know, you'd very much be getting a jury of your victims, so sort of queuing up to do terrible violence on you, in this case to peck you a bit.
Someone's just stolen some valuable ducks, which apparently are worth around 100 quid. So as things to steal go, I mean, I think you're better off going for the TV, to be honest, because per amount of trouble that you're going to get from the actual thing that you're stealing. A TV is going to give you less trouble than a duck, surely.
Hmm.
Well, unlike other things, is that Someone's footprints were found in the fallen snow from the direction of the nearby Shotover Nature Reserve. And there are two points I'd like to make here. Firstly, that it appears someone has nicked them to put them in the nature reserve.
Yeah, which, right. So Robin Hood's sort of scenario.
That sounds like, yeah. That's not how I go about it. I know some people who are really who really like animals might feel that they were better in a nature reserve than in someone's house.
And, steal from the rich.
Would steal from the people who are keeping them in the garden.
Give to the ducks.
Yeah. But the thing that really got me is that there's a nature reserve called Shotover, which implies to me it's slightly worrying. It sounds like this is what's going to happen to all of your birds if they go to these nature reserves. If they start flying, bang! But luckily there's a flightless ducks, so it's all okay. That's not going to happen.
Yeah.
If any other birds try and muscle in, flying over, bang!
Unless you get a scenario a bit like Chicken Run. Duck Run, I suppose. Duck Catapult.
That's what they can do after they finished flinging the dead dogs. And
yeah, that catapult's getting more use than you'd have thought.
I think we spotted an opening in the market.
To heck with this world domination thing. I'm going to go build medieval siege equipment and then maybe continue the world domination.
I'm sure we combine medieval weaponry with modern weaponry in some sort of world domination way.
Just put a plane in the bucket of a catapult and go pudding, yay.
The worrying thing is, I've heard some things about launching space shuttles and stuff, and in some of the early science fiction that was effectively what they were thinking of,
a massive catapult.
A massive gun. Just actually loading it as if it was a bullet in a gun in a big thing and actually firing the spaceship into space.
Wow.
So it's not actually as stupid as you first thought. But it is pretty stupid. So there we go. Well, so we're going to leave that one there. We've got our anthology of anthology of marginal interest coming up as the last song. That was Deadmau5 with Ghosts and Stuff. It's and stuff rather than and stuff. It's cooler that way.
There's one thing I love in my music. It's non-specificism.
But we're coming towards the end of the show now. We've got the section we like to call the anthology of marginal interest. All those stories that we didn't feel merited us waffling about for a while, but amused us slightly.
So we'll waffle in a small sort of way. We'll waffle in a sentence or less. So we reserve the right to punctuate that as we wish.
So we've got the CIA, which is obviously a three-letter acronym, and therefore has to give everything involved in the CIA three-letter acronyms, has called its WikiLeaks task force WTF, which is an expression of surprise for those of you who are not down with the... there's the internet connections, and then a word that we can't actually broadcast at this time of day. So, what the fish, we'll call it.
What the fish.
It's my polite way of putting it.
Fishing hell.
that sort of thing. If you're a Battlestar Galactica fan, we can possibly start using Battlestar Galactica terms.
Frack, isn't it? Yeah.
Frack.
Yeah.
What the frack? There we go.
We could just stumble carefully around the old four-letter word there.
Just the fact that they've called it that. So all of these official documents are going to have WTF, which is pretty much their reaction.
You can meet people in the bar and say, "Hey, I'm on the WTF force," which is which is pretty awesome.
That's redundant because it's Wikipedia Task Force. So you just said I'm on the Wikipedia Task Force.
I should point out WikiLeaks.
Wikipedia
is not under, entirely under investigation.
Oh, I'm sorry. This is what happens when you just look at W without the actual word there. WikiLeaks, not Wikipedia. Sorry. I apologise to Wikipedia.
I've got to say, you fished that one up there.
I did fish that one.
You wouldn't have thought how much fun there is, isn't it? I should just quickly point out, this does continue the CIA's tradition of naming their task force after surprised exclamations. So when they're investing Watergate, that was Operation... Huh?
Really?
Yes. No. I just like the idea of government reports issued by Operation spell H-U-E-E-H question mark.
The worrying thing is it sounds completely plausible.
Oh dear.
There you go. So
you're fishing gullible. I'll stop that now. Moving on with the anthology. Oh, sorry, yes. I was prompting you to move on, but no, I was prompting myself to move on. Yes, I have a couple of items of marginal interest this year. First of all, the BBC announces that Gas Blast Man is still not home, which is all well and good. This is basically just another entry from my file of terrible superheroes that the BBC insists on inventing. Gas Blast Man, able to blast things with a gas of his choice in order to fight crime.
We should keep a collection of these just gradually over the course of the year so that towards the end of the year we can have our award for actual worst superhero of the year.
Yeah, yeah. Okay. So what crime can you solve with a gas of a blast of gas?
Blockage in your pipes.
Oh, yeah, okay, yeah, yep. Which is, you wouldn't really want superheroes sort of sat there going, block toilet, kablam. You know, it's not really. Maybe superheroes off days, so weekend job, gas blast man, the plumber. Deploy ammonia.
Moving on to another story. The Beatles' Abbey Road Zebra Crossing has been given listed status. It's been recognised for its cultural and historical importance. I wouldn't recognise it, would you? It says Zebra Crossing.
It is on Abbey Road. That's more of a identifying feature. Don't want to undermine you there, but I'm pretty sure I could pin it down. My strategy would be go to Abbey Road, find a Zebra Crossing.
But they moved it. This is the thing. They actually moved. The original Zebra Crossing was moved several metres for traffic management reasons.
Oh, so it's not the original one.
No.
It's not the actual proper one. You're actually walking sort of 3 yards to the right of the Beatles in what would have been playing in traffic. Yeah, okay.
So, perhaps that's what another. That sounds like an idea for an album cover, actually. Just
there was a Beatles EP called Playing in Traffic in which they hurriedly crossed the road, not using the zebra crossing.
Well, there you go. That's got listed status now.
Item 4 of the anthology of marginal interest is the BBC reports that 2 hurt in mass brawl, which I'm going to presume consists of 2 Catholic priests battling each other for the last bottle of communion wine. It gives you the opportunity to smash somebody over the head and say, transubstantiate this, Fisher.
The other alternative is that some people have been at CERN arguing over whether the Higgs boson exists as well, because that's what gives particles mass.
Ah, so they might have a mass brawl.
Yeah, I'm going to discover the Higgs boson before you, Biff. That Biff was an attempt at a sound effect from Batman rather than the name of the person that they were talking to.
Yazoo. That's a drink.
Yes.
Moving on.
We've also got Christopher Lee is to release a symphonic metal album to tell the story of Charlemagne, the first Holy Roman Emperor. So it's just like adding unlikeliness on top of unlikeliness here, I feel.
I did listen to this, and what we basically have here is sort of pulse width, sort of time division multiplexing of Christopher Lee, symphony, and metal. Thus to produce a Christopher Lee symphonic metal album. So literally, if you listen to it, it does go just Christopher Lee declaiming, you know, sort of saying, I, Charlemagne, shall slay the Saxons. And then symphony, in which a couple of violins, MIDI violins, go dum-dee-dum-dee-dum. And then metal, in which some metal guitarist shows up and goes... And then back to Christopher Lee.
How does the metal guitarist go again?
Sounds very much like a posh person.
I don't agree with this at all.
I say, yes.
He's going to invade the Lord Saxons. Oh,
I don't agree. You should kill the Saxons, quite frankly. As a Saxon man.
Yes. But, this isn't the first time he's done this sort of thing, actually. He's been involved with... So, yes. There you go. Also, apparently Charlemagne is actually... is actually his direct ancestor.
Oh, really? Awesome.
Also, there's a lot of characters in this particular album, even the Pope. So I'm wondering whether if they got the actual current Pope to go in and start singing for that, that would put it even further than it being Christopher Lee.
Oh dear.
Well, we're reaching the we've reached the end of the show. We've just got to decide what we think is going to be in the news over the next week, based entirely on what we've discovered already.
Okay, well, call me unimaginative, but my prediction is that the Pope will read that story and invent his own genre of hard rock. That is, of course, Pontiff metal, and he'll be putting out his first record next week.
I'd like to think that with all the talk we've had about medieval catapults, that will actually making a medieval catapults will come back and not only help revive the economy, but also be involved in robberies again. So people will be trying to the next time someone tries to steal a selection of old coins, they might actually use a medieval catapult, an actual period catapult, to match the period dress and period coins.
Yeah, okay. And then maybe, like, for a stunt at his first show, we could launch the Pope at the Romanian Parliament. There you go. That'll solve everyone's problems.
there we go. What else have we missed out of that? What have we not used to... I think that's everything, to be honest.
We're just slowly and ponderously construct a 27-way link. Bear with us.
And we just had a quick email that's just about snuck in before the end of the show from Brian, who I assume is still in America, despite him not saying explicitly in the email this time, is that he actually has the Christopher Lee Symphonic Metal album and was also a bit disappointed about the non-combination of those three elements. So there, a job awaits you in music reviewing.
At least one copy of that album has sold.
There you go. Thank you to
kudos, Ryan.
Thank you to Brian and Jasmine for emailing in. I've been Michael Quintario,
and I've been Chris Moten,
and this has been Burst of Bubble. Have a good week.